I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, this entire program is based around Sheffield.
Ah, yes, we're at the Sheffield Steamfest.
We are indeed, and we met some really interesting people there and saw some fantastic demonstrations.
That's
we're
going
to tell all the people about and in just a moment. But one of the things that I just wanted to make mention, we had Robert Hill on the program last week. And he is from the Pernes Steamworld.
Yes, in Westbury.
In Westbury. Now, we caught up with him again at the Sheffield Steamfest, and this time, not with one of his traction engines, he's actually got, what would you call it, Lynn?
It's an organ that runs on steam.
It runs on steam, and the way it plays the tunes is via a cardboard book.
Yes, a card with punched out holes in it, and it's like a bit like a pianola.
A bit like a pianola. But the thing is, it's obviously it's steam driven. Really, really interesting. And he's going to tell us all about that, and also one of the other smaller instruments that he had out there that you actually have to hand crank.
Right.
A bit like starting a car. And he said there's a bit of skill involved in that, because if you don't get that tempo right.
Yeah, the song goes all wayward.
It's a bit like having the 33 and a third on 45. It speeds up and slows down. You've got to get the tempo and the timing right. So he's our first guest. Now, after that, we spoke with...
We speak with Rebecca and Bill, and they're from the Knights Templar in Tasmania.
Now, the Knights Templar, very interesting. These guys are into medieval fighting and jousting like knights.
In full gear too.
In full armour, folks. I've got to tell you now, young Rebecca, she is a mum and she says she loves to kill people. Only on the jousting field, of course. And she tells us that her suit of armour weighs 35 kilograms.
Oh, that's impressive.
Very impressive, you know. And she said to me, well, I'm used to carrying kids around, so it's just like having another body on me.
Yeah.
But Bill, I think he might be the founder of this Knights Templar. He's like their instructor, like their sensei.
Yes.
And he tells us he's an actual knight.
And
it's taken him 7 years to be graded to that level.
Wow.
7 years to get
That's
to that level of knight. Yes.
Mm.
Now, after that, we speak with...
Peter Winskill from the Wee Georgie Wood.
Right.
And that's a train.
It is a train, and it lives in the town of Tulla.
Yes, in Tasmania.
And they brought it to the
Steamfest
at Sheffield. It doesn't go there all the time, but the volume of people that wanted to ride on this.
Yeah, I know.
They think they're going to try and get it there every single year.
It's a quaint little train. It's nice.
Beautiful little train. And Peter's a local from Tulla. He's lived there all his life, so he knows a lot about the town of Tulla and also a lot about the Wee Georgie Wood. Now, there are our guests. Normally, we would sort of say on with the show, but before we do that, I want to play a song.
Right.
It's a Johnny Williamson song.
Yeah.
And the reason why I've selected it is because two of our three guests have requested Johnny Williamson songs.
Oh, he's very popular.
Extremely talented. And the song that I selected was a number called Waltzing Matilda, which is a family favourite by everybody. Everybody can sing along to this. So that's the reason why I selected that particular song by Johnny Williamson.
Okay.
So apart from all these incredible, interesting guests... we've also got a fabulous selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
There once was a jolly swagman camped by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree. And he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boy, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. Down came a chum buck to drink at the billabong. Up got the swaggy and grabbed him with glee. And he sang as he stowed that chum buck in his tucker bag, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda, me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. And he sang as he stowed that jumbuck in his cargo bag, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Down came the squatter, mounted on his thoroughbred. Up came the troopers, one, two, three. Who's the jolly jumbuck you've got in your tucker bag? You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Who's the jolly jumbuck you've got in your tucker bag? You'll come a waltzing Matilda. Up got the swaggy and jumped into the billabong. You'll never catch me alive, said he. And his ghost may be heard as you pass by that billabong. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. Ghost may be heard as you pass by that billabong. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come.
G'day listeners, Phil C here, and we are at Sheffield at the Steamfest, and I'm chatting with Robert Hill. Now, other listeners who would have heard us chat with Robert, that was at the Pern's Steamworld.
That's correct.
And we're here today with Robert again. How are you going today, Robert?
Not too bad at all, thanks.
It's
not too
bad at all. Fabulous day.
It is, it's glorious.
And you have got actually... Tell us what you've got, because it looks like it looks like a huge piano or something, doesn't it? But it's not. Tell us exactly what it is.
That's right. This is a 33 keyless fairground organ, the sort of organ that you'd have found on the fairgrounds of Europe and indeed certain parts of Australia back in the day, about 100 years or so ago, through to the 1950s when the tannoy system came in and people started playing records at fairs.
So it's sort of like a huge pianola, really, isn't it? Except there's differences in it.
Oh, there's a lot of differences, yes.
Yes.
But for those folks that know a pianola, it plays itself on its paper roll.
Yes.
Well, this uses cardboard books.
Okay.
With slots in.
Right.
And it's actually a pressurised system, so it's using positive pressure rather than vacuum, which a pianola uses.
Okay.
But then it's basically what it does as air goes through the system, opens valves and closes valves and puts air through to the pipework, and hence the pipes in the front of the organ sing out nice and loud.
Yeah, look, I heard a song before as I was walking past, the Chicken Dance.
Otherwise known as the Birdie Song.
The Birdie Song. Now, that incredible, so accurate. Like, I thought, well, I recognise that immediately. So how do they get the books
to sound like the music? Like, how is it a difficult thing?
No, I mean, we've got pipes in the same way as if someone's playing the Birdie song on a Hammond electronic organ or something like that.
Right.
So you've got the notes there. Each pipe has its own notes and is tuned accordingly. And it's a case of the books control which notes are played in which order.
Okay.
So it's as simple as that. The real skill with these things, in terms of not just those who make these machines, but those who arrange and cut the books themselves.
Yes.
Because the books go through at a standard speed, but the slots have to be marked accordingly and cut accordingly to the tune that you want. So if you want a slow tune, you have a long slot. If it's a quick tune, you have a small short slot.
Okay.
And the mechanism operates like that.
So a bit like your semi-quavers and quavers in real music.
Yes, but this time you change those semi-quavers and quavers into lengths.
Lengths on the card. On the board.
Yes.
In the book, on the card.
Yeah.
So that's a real skill in itself.
Oh, it is. It is.
Now, they're obviously extremely old, but you did mention when we were chatting before that these books are still available.
That's correct.
But it's obviously an expensive exercise to buy a book.
Like, oh,
what
yes.
What would a song cost in a book?
It basically goes by the minute. If I'm remembering rightly, by the meter.
Yes.
You buy a book by the meter, and if I remember rightly, it's $11 a meter at the moment. And that's before you look at shipping, certainly from Europe. There are one or two cutting machines here in Australia, but they tend to be for small books.
Yes.
This is a relatively small organ compared with some of the others that we have.
Okay.
So at this sort of size, this is about $11.
$11 a meter, and how many meters to make a book?
Probably need somewhere in the region of 20 meters to go for about 2.5 minutes.
Whoa! So 20 meters at $11 a meter, did you say?
Yeah.
That's an expensive book
for
one particular song. So how long do they last?
Thankfully, they can last a long time if you look after them. We've got a couple of books on this organ that date back to the 1950s.
So how old is the organ?
The organ itself was built in the 1970s.
Okay.
Although we have at home an organ that was built in the around about 1906, we think.
Wow. And how do you go about repairing it? Because it's just a mass of hoses and like... Do you have to ring up somebody and say, "Oh, it's playing flat," or one of the hoses is broken? Or
I must admit, most people have to do that.
Yeah.
But I grew up with these things, so I'm certainly the only person in Tassie that can do this sort of work.
Okay.
And there's not many of us in Australia that can do this.
How many organs would there be in Australia, do you think? Do you know?
I think there's round about. Because I'm a member of the Australian Mechanical Organ Society.
Yes.
Shout out to all those if any of you are listening.
Okay.
There's probably round about 40 to 50 of varying size, from the little busker organs that are sort of not much bigger than a sort of suitcase,
right.
Through to the massive organs such as you'll see. There's a collection near Sydney, and that has one of the biggest organs ever made. And that is round about... 7 or 8 meters long and about the same in height.
Wow, that is big.
Yes, we've got one at home that's 7 meters long, but she's only about 2.5 meters high.
At home, as in your home, or at the shed perch?
At home, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, at the moment, she's not been put back together again from when she came over from Europe, so I've got to find somewhere big enough to rebuild her, because she was actually on the back of a large truck.
Okay.
So we're not quite sure we're going to put them on a truck, a trailer, or we're going to find somewhere to house it.
So what do you go for parts? Do you just are they basic things that you can just sort of buy anywhere? Or?
We can still get parts from Europe if we need them, but otherwise it's a case of do it yourself.
You just got to manufacture your own parts.
Yes.
Oh, jeez. And how long are you out here for today?
We're here for the weekend.
So you're here for the three days?
Yeah, 3 days, yes.
Fabulous. Well, I'm sure you're going to get an enormous amount of interest with these guys. You've got three out here in total, so this is the big one.
Yep.
What's the big one called? It's got 34 keys.
33.
33 keys.
Yep.
And it has a name?
It has the name of Annabelle.
Annabelle?
Yep.
Okay.
The baby of the three at the moment we've got here, that's about the size of a kitchen wall cabinet.
Okay.
She runs herself. When we just switch her on, so it's a nice little thing that used to be in a children's ride.
Okay.
And that's called Pearl because it's white.
Right.
And then the new one for us, which is not sounding very good because it needs a bit of TLC.
Yep.
That's a 36 keyed organ, and that's called the Wagon Master. That was built in Victoria.
Okay.
So it's one of the early Australian built organs.
Okay. Now, the Wagon Master, we should point out, just for the benefit of the listeners, is actually hand-operated. You actually have to crank the wheel like you're about to start over an old vintage car.
That's right, yes. If you see images of people with street organs, hand-turning it, this is one of those.
Okay, and I guess the skill involved in this type is you have to get the timing right, or the tempo, or the speed right.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's going to sound
awful. And you've got to be consistent as well.
Yes.
Which is very difficult when the music slows down.
Yes.
But you've actually got to keep going at the same pace.
Yes. So did it take you long to learn how to play that, or was it just trial and error?
No, it's as I said earlier, I've been brought up with these things, so it's just a case of, just comes naturally to me.
Naturally, okay.
I've had somebody else try to play it and they made a complete pig's ear of it, but never mind.
Well, I'm not going to put my hand up and offer when you start to get a large crowd. Robert, thank you so much for chatting with us again today. We had so much fun at the SteamWorld.
Good, good.
And absolutely loved it there, and it's fantastic to see you here. You got great weather and a big crowd, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot of people gathering once you actually turn this one on.
Okay.
Now, I'm going, you know, from last time, I got to play an Aussie song. What's your favourite Aussie song?
Well, on this occasion, I'm going to say that the only Aussie song that we've got on the organ is Timey Kangaroo Down Sports, so I shall play that one for you.
Okay, well, you just turn that on, Robert, while we hear it. Sounding more like the kangaroos getting shot. Listen, stick around for more Roaming Oz, and I'll give you the real Timey Kangaroo Down Sport by Roll Paris.
There's an old Australian stockman lying dying, and he gets himself up onto one elbow and he turns to his mates who are gathered round and he says, "Watch me wallabies feed, mate. Watch me wallabies feed. They're a dangerous breed, mate, so watch me wallabies feed all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Keep me cockatoo cool, curl, keep me cockatoo cool. Oh, don't go acting the fool, curl, just keep me cockatoo cool all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. And take me koala back, Jack, take me koala back. He lives somewhere out on the track, Mac, so take me koala back all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. And mind me platypus duck, Bill, mind me platypus duck. Oh, don't let him go running amok, Bill, just mind me platypus duck all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport, tie me kangaroo down. Play your didgeridoo, blue, play your didgeridoo. Like, keep playing till I shoot through, blue. Play your didgeridoo. all together now. Tiny kangaroo down sport, tiny kangaroo down, tiny kangaroo down sport, tiny kangaroo down. Tan me hide when I'm dead, Fred. Tan me hide when I'm dead. So we tanned his hide when he died, Clyde, and that's it hanging on the shed all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz and we are at Sheffield at the Steamfest, and you wouldn't believe what we've ran into. We've ran into some medieval knights. I'm chatting with Rebecca and Bill and they are from the Knights Templar in Tasmania. How are you both going today?
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're going good. Very vicious.
Bill, tell me, are you, well, I've got to tell you, I've never been this close to a lady, and she is a lady, looking so menacing. Let me first start with Rebecca. Rebecca, you're an attractive lady. Why did you take up medieval fighting?
Because I wanted to know how to kill.
Okay. Right.
It's a fantastic sport. It's just a great sport to do, and it really allows you to focus.
Okay.
Have some me time.
Okay.
As a mum of many, I like my me time, okay. And this definitely has given it to me. You can't hear anything in those helmets, so if any child wants me, I'm unavailable.
You're unavailable. So what about your partner, your husband, boyfriend, whatever? You want me time, so what happens if he comes up and says, darling, put the jug on? Are you going to pull out your broadsword and want to sever his arm? Or?
No, I just can't hear it. Just helmet on, nothing else exists. End of.
Bill, let's talk about you for a moment. Like, how long have you been doing it and why did you get into it in the first place?
I've been doing it for about 8 years and somebody just invited me along to it and I thought I'll just go along and have a look. And it's a bit like Fight Club. If it's your first time, you have to fight. So
okay.
I just got into it and
right.
found that I enjoyed it. I'd done a lot of martial arts before. And I just have found this was a martial art where you can hit somebody full on in armour, don't hold back, and you're not going to hurt them.
Seriously?
Yes.
So
if you hit the right place, as hard as you like, you're not going to hurt them.
It's true.
The right place,
and
as
that's
in
why
where
we have
the
our
armour is, which is yes. head, because you wear headgear.
Yeah, we call it PPE gear.
PPE, okay. What does that mean?
Personal protection
gear.
Equipment, yes.
Personal protection gear equipment. So the places to hit, Bill, what are they?
It's the head, the shoulders. As you can see, it's armoured up there.
Armoured up there.
It's the sides, where the ribs are. It's the thigh in the femur bone. And there's a stab right to the midsection.
Okay.
So you have armour in all those places.
Wow.
It should be fine. You can see the armour's pretty dented up.
Yes.
But still good.
Now, talking about the armour, Rebecca, is it heavy?
Yeah, it's about 35 kilo worth of armour.
Okay.
It's pretty heavy.
35 kilo as in the entire, including the helmet.
Yes.
What about the sword? How heavy is that?
It can be anything from 1.3 through to 2.45.
Wow. So it's pretty heavy gear. It's like almost like having half a person on your body. 35
Absolutely.
Kilos, 70
yeah.
kilos. Some girls, smaller girls, 70 kilos. So it's like having half a person on your body.
Absolutely.
See, your mum, she's used to that.
Yeah, I'm used to that. I've always got other bodies on my body.
Okay. So why, I guess, you know, being a lady, you said children, childbirth, you can handle anything, right?
Pretty
but
much, that's where we're at.
Yeah, she's
why
tougher
did
than
you
me.
Take up this type of fighting? Like, why not gymnastics or karate or something? If you want martial art, why all the armour?
It offers so many different learnings, this particular martial art. So, like Bill, I've done other martial arts,
okay.
been interested, had a lot of fun. But with this particular martial art, you get to learn how to make all of your armour. You get to learn how to defend yourself, how to attack. You get to learn how strong you really are, how much stamina do I have, what's my end point. That's fantastic.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, we talk about not getting hurt, not wanting to get hurt. There are less injuries in this particular sport than there are in soccer, for example.
Yeah.
Okay.
Less soccer mums too. I think the other thing that's interesting is that once the armour goes on, it doesn't matter about age or gender.
Okay.
We don't have a women's division.
No.
Do you have, like in other forms of martial art, there are different levels. You start out as a white belt, for example, and you end up as a black belt if we're talking traditional karate.
Yeah.
Are there levels with you guys? Are you a sensei, for example, that teaches the group?
No, he's better than a sensei.
Better than a sensei?
I'm
belt?
A bit more humble than that. But
okay.
We have four rankings. Well, it's five, actually. You start off with squire. Then it's man-at-arms, sword-man-at-arms, sword-master, and then finally knight.
Okay.
And knight's usually a gold badge, makes you
so
a knight.
So you're a knight, Bill?
Yeah.
Bill Knight, okay.
But you don't have to call me sir.
No, okay, okay. How long did it take you to become a knight?
Took me about 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're a knight too, Rebecca. So are you a knight or a knighthead?
I'm definitely not a knight. It took Bill 7 years to become a knight. While Bill was doing that, I was off having children, so I didn't make my race in the same fashion.
I was doing a lot of really hard training, whereas yeah. Rebecca was doing something much more harder.
Yes.
And I actually came into training a number of times, still breastfeeding.
Wow. So what are you then? When I say what are you, I mean what level are you? You're not a squire, you're a knight?
No.
You're not
a
knight?
I'm just a man-at-arms, yeah.
So she has been ranked.
Yep.
Haven't been ranked?
She has been ranked, yes.
Been ranked?
Yes.
Okay,
I need to be ranked more.
I've just watched you fight, and I think you won.
She did?
I did.
You
yep.
did.
Won one fight, yeah.
You did your fight. Yeah,
so
I mean,
I said,
the other chap
matter.
Won, and then you took him on.
Yep.
And you beat him.
Yep. Yeah, and exactly what Bill's saying, it doesn't matter gender, age, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yep. Yep, everyone is able to do this sport.
Everyone.
Once you get the armour on.
Rebecca, how long does it take you to suit up?
So it should take around 20 minutes, but like I said before, my armour has actually just recently been destroyed, so I'm in other people's armour.
Oh.
So it takes far longer when it's not your own armour and you're not used to your own kit. Yeah.
Wow. 20 minutes to get ready for a fight. And how long, Bill, how long do these competitions go? Like you have a fight, 3 points wins. Is that the way it runs? That's what I just watched.
Usually on a display like this, it's like that.
Okay.
We usually make it much longer when we go for a tournament that actually means something. So we'll go up to 5 points and we'll have up to 20 combatants. And so it just is elimination. Whoever is the best.
Right.
So, you know, whoever wins gets to move on to the next round.
Okay, and is this how it works to become graded, like from squire up to knight? Is it just
to be graded? What we do is we look at somebody's skill when they've got that skill level.
Yes.
We say, you know, we don't tell them; they just turn up at training, and we decide we're going to grade them there and then. So they're not prepared for it, and we do what we call black dog, which means they stand for Rebecca to be graded. The first grading she did, she had to stand and defend herself for about 40 minutes. Everybody just lined up and hammered her for about 40 minutes.
Wow.
That's 45 minutes.
It's 45 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. Took the extra 5 minutes. I almost died.
Did you have to fight off all these guys for 45 minutes?
Yeah, yes. We all just lined up and just took turns at whacking her.
And turns in defending?
Yes.
So for 45 minutes you were attacked and you had to defend or attack?
No, just defend.
Just
defend.
For no
40.
Attack.
Yeah, it's 45 Whoa. Minutes, yeah.
So what's your biggest strength, Rebecca, defending or attacking? Because you won out there. There's obviously a strategy to it. No?
No, there's no strategy. It's muscle memory and fun.
Okay.
Yeah. If you can defend, you can look for openings to attack.
Okay. So to become a really skilled fighter, what would it be more about? Obviously, it's a combination, but do you think it's more important to defend and look for the openings to attack, or just to go in there?
No, it's more important to remain focused at all times.
Okay.
Yeah, to be unfazed. And that's part of the black dogging, to be, you know, calm under fire.
Yeah.
Wow.
So to be a knight, I had to defend myself for about 50 minutes, have a little rest, come back with a sword and shield, defend myself for another half an hour or so, have a little rest, then come back with a two-handed sword and defend myself for another 15 minutes or so.
Wow.
And so that's the final ranking.
These swords are not light, neither is the armour, so that must require quite a bit of stamina.
You feel it the next day.
You feel it the next day?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you said, Rebecca, that they can hit you because of the armour, you don't feel it.
That's true.
But your body must feel something at the end of it. Or is it you're now conditioned that you don't feel tired at the end of it, or you don't feel injuries in any spot where you've been hit by the swords?
Sometimes you'll get hit in a spot where you don't have enough protection in that particular spot. You might just end up with a little lump the next day, but I've never had a horrible injury.
You've never had any injuries.
And we always come out feeling energised. And everyone that finishes the training is ready to just go again, you know. Yep. So, yeah, we feel great.
So speak for yourself, I feel tired.
The fighting that we saw just a moment ago, look, to me, it was more about, I guess, the skill of trying to hit the head, the shoulder, where...
Yeah, yeah.
But are you going to have some real full-on... Let's try and kill each other in a little bit.
They're my favourite fight.
I can imagine.
Sometimes we do a round, like, you know, a 60-minute round where we're just, like, hammering each other. But some of those things, if it becomes just a hammering match.
Yes.
And the skill starts going out of it. We need to try and find that balance where blocking is as important as hitting.
As hitting, yeah.
So if we can find a real nice balance of skill there.
Yep.
That's kind of what we're looking for in those sort of matches.
Yes. Now, who graded you, Bill?
The knights above me.
The knights above me?
Yeah.
So there are a fair few of you knights or
yes,
in Tasmania?
There's only a couple of us at this level now.
Yes.
At the moment. And, we're slowly moving forward. We have an outlet in Launceston.
Right.
We fight in Norwood in Launceston. And we've got like a bit over half a dozen people that come there every fortnight to fight. And then we do the same in Burnie. I think it's weekly in Burnie. And there can be up to 10 people there training. I mean, we do have more members, but when that's about what we get, show up. So.
Okay. So when you train, is it a weekly thing? Like if you're in a member of a karate school, you have a dojo and you go once or twice a week. Is it similar to that? Similar to that. So there is an actual. It wouldn't be called a dojo. What's it called?
Just where we train.
Just where you train. So it doesn't have
a fighting space for the day, a regular place that you go to,
and a regular place that you train.
Yep.
Sounds fantastic.
Somewhere where we can not do too much damage to the furniture or ourselves.
Fabulous. All right, well, we're going to have to wind this up now. I should have asked you this right at the start, and if you don't have an answer, that's fine. An Aussie song. I've got to finish with an Aussie song. Is there any favourites of yours, Rebecca? Do you have a favourite artist or band? Well, you're not into music. You're more into killing people.
Yeah, that's true. I'm more into killing people.
what about you, Bill? Do you like your Aussie music? You got a favourite Aussie? I mean, you look a bit like you belong in the Kelly Gang or the Bushwhackers or John Williamson. Or
yeah, well, I was going to say, the older I get, True Blue seems to...
True Blue?
That's it, yeah. True Blue seems to be the thing, you know.
Okay.
Because I'm old. I'm like, you know, over 60 now, so, you know.
You're over 60?
Yeah.
You don't look it. You don't look it.
Fighting keeps me young.
It has to, because you don't look 60 in the face. You've got a long, white beard, but so does Santa, so do I. But
yeah.
All right, Bill, how about then we throw that on for you? How would that be?
Sounds good.
All right, listeners, stick around for more Roman Oz. We'll be back with Johnny Williamson's Hey True Blue.
Hey True Blue, don't say you've gone. Say you've knocked off for a smoker, and you'll be back later on. Hey, True Blue. Hey, True Blue. Give it to me straight, face to face. Are you really disappearing? Just another dying race. Hey, True Blue. True Blue. Is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your man when he's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True blue, I'm asking you. Hey, true blue, can you bear the load? Will you tie it up with wire just to keep the show on the road? Hey, true blue. Hey, true blue. Now be fair dinkum. Is your heart still there? If they sell us out like sponge cake, do you really care? Hey, true blue. True blue, is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when she's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True blue, I'm asking you. True blue, is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo?
Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
This is Raymond Oz, and I'm at Sheffield at the Steamfest, and I'm on the Wee Georgie Wood chatting with Peter Winskill. How are you going today, Pete?
Yeah, good, good. It's a great day. Look, how good to be, you know, the sun shining, yes. The trains running up and down, more importantly is we've got bums on seats with all the carriages, so that's fantastic.
You've been running most of the morning, yes. And you had a lot of people riding on the avenue.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm probably taking a punt here, but I don't know whether Wee Georgie would have ever pulled this many people before, you know.
Yep.
Only ever operated two carriages in its life between Tuller and Farrell Sydon.
Okay.
But one carriage, they were pretty basic with the seats, but the other carriage was, the carriage was mainly used for projects, you know, as
okay.
I said. You know, mainly to carry the beer, the food, the feeders ice cream, etc. So,
yeah.
Look, it's great to see people in, and it's great to see the kids. You know, the Thomas the Tank Engine sort of scenario, and it's good to hear the whistle, so... Yeah.
So is the Wee Georgie Wood a regular feature here at the Steamfest?
No. Look, the guys that I'm sort of not involved like these fellas are. These are the nuts and bolts. The guys with orange shirts are the nuts and bolts.
Okay.
And the representatives before them, or the hard-working people before them, they've been talking about trying to get it to Sheffield, but it's only just come to fruition.
Yes.
And it's a good thing because down at down in Tully, it doesn't, you know, during the winter, it doesn't sort of run all the time.
Right.
During the summer, it sort of fluctuates the amount of people they have come in for the day, for the Saturday or the Sunday. So these guys, with the, as I said, with the orange shirts, they'd be really smiling because they, it sort of makes it worthwhile for them to go to the trouble to bring it up.
Absolutely.
And the guys that transported it, look, they it was easy for them to do it because that's their experience and they nailed it, no trouble at all.
Right. Yep. So what would the Wee Georgie would have been doing when she was originally built in Tullamore? What was it built for?
Yeah, look, it was it came from England, from Leeds, and if you look at the plates on the side, it came from England, and just like a lot of the mining industry, certainly all over Australia and certainly on the West Coast, the train was were the mainstay because that was the way of getting the produce, the ore, out to the ports. And Wee Georgie was no exception. This is a 2-foot gauge, whereas some of the other stuff was bigger gauges. Wee Georgie, Tulla being isolated, and I refer to it as a fishbowl.
Yep.
The only way in and out was by train. It had a number of different trains before it. You know, maybe two or three, and then they're horse-drawn trams to get the oil from Tulla to Farrell Side, and then once it got to Farrell Side and it got it on the big EBR train, then went to Burnie, and then the oil went all over the world, whoever bought it.
Yes.
But equally important, people like us, we don't see it, we not only see it as Wee Georgie to cart the ore, which was very important, but it also carted the mums and dads, it carted the babies in, and it carted the dead out, you know, so it done everything. And anyone that grew up with it would have their own Wee Georgie Wood story.
Yes.
You know,
so you grew up with it?
Oh, yeah, look, I was 3 years old when I went to Tulla. My dad was a miner, worked at Williams Ford. He got a job at Tulla, so we, there was four of us, three brothers and myself, and we went to Tulla. We lived in a company house. Dad always told the story, he liked Tulla because the fishing and the shooting were better, so, you know, and he, like a lot of other people, was outdoorsy person, bush person, so... But, you know, you look at the train, there'd be nothing for the driver, which in my time mainly was to Lindsay Marshall or Bill Winskill, my elder brother Bill Winskill. They'd drop a flat tray off. The blokes, the miners on their Saturday and Sunday, they'd pick up firewood. They'd go like a cut cat. They'd load the flat tray up with firewood. When Wee Georgie come along now, they'd push it back into town.
Yep.
There was no dropping truckloads of logs off like there is nowadays, you know. And it was cross cut tour and it's pretty dear to our hearts.
Absolutely. And as a boy, I suppose you would have had a bit of fun on it too, wouldn't you? Would you been?
Oh, look, my brother used to drive, and so we'd be in the cab, we'd be on the trolley. Silly things like putting 22 rifle bullets on the railway line, letting them go on off, or putting pennies on them and letting them flatten out. And look, it was just, we enjoyed it. I think might have only been one car in colour when I was a lad, you know. As I said, everyone could tell their own story on Wee Georgie Wood. Yep.
And what were the population have been back then?
Oh, yeah, no, that's a good one. 100?
100 people. Yeah. And what about now?
No, a bit more now because of the hydro, where the hydro built their dams, they left a fair number of the houses there and people bought them and then they use them for weekenders and a lot of people work around the West Coast. They work in the mines.
Yes.
And they live there. So, the houses at Tulla were fairly basic, you know.
Okay.
I'm originally trained as a carpenter, so we used to do a lot of work on the houses.
Mm-hmm.
But they were pretty basic miners' cottages, you know, and there was a bit added on here and a bit added on there, and the outside dunny up the back, you know, so that was the way it was. Yeah.
How did it make you feel when you realised that Wee Georgie was coming out to the festival?
Oh, stoked.
You're absolutely
right. Yeah, I look. Jenny, the lady that does the, she's a the lady that does the responsible person thing, she just put a note out, said, look, we're looking for the volunteer to give us hands for the couple of days. So I jumped at it. I mean, I can't drive it or do things like that, but I can do things like this, you know, help. And if local would get in, give a hand, it's fine.
And you give a bit of a rolling commentary as the train goes along?
Yeah, probably too much. I probably yaffle too much at the end of the day, you know. I think as long as people get the enjoyment of smelling the smoke and if I give a little bit of an indication what we Georgie did, that's all good, you know.
Yeah. Well, how about if we just let you do your thing? I've got a nice discussion here. You've been just chatting to me one-on-one. What about if you tell all the travellers on the train?
We'll do that.
Let's do that right now, Peter.
No, that's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Peter. My job today is just to give you a bit of a rundown on Wee Georgie Wood. I will say right from the start that I'm not a steam buff like these guys in the orange shirts. They're the ones that drive it. They're the ones that keep it on the rails. And I take my hat off to them for what they do. Wee Georgie first came into the, I describe it as the fishbowl of Tulla. And I don't know whether you people understand where Tulla is. It's a valley. It had a mine or a couple of different mines on one side of the hill. My dad went there in 1953. I was 2 years of age when I first went to Tulla with my family. And then we stayed there for quite a number of years till the road that you would know it now was put through in 1964. Wee Georgie spent that time travelling between Tulla, pretty well on a daily basis, maybe not Saturday or Sunday totally, but and then it would take the ore to EBR line at Farrell Siding, and then the ore was transferred to the EBR line, then it went to Burnie, and then it was sold wherever around the world. And I described Wee Georgie had done everything. It took the newborn babies from the hospital into Tulla. And it took the people that were about to die to the hospitals out. So that was the way that it operated. But it also took all the produce. You know, it might have been things like the Daily Bread, the Advocate. I still remember the Melbourne Sun used to come through. The alcohol, the long neck BB bottles of beer. The meat from Ridgely. These are the ones that I'm trying to think about. So basically anything that you needed for a small community to survive, Wee Georgie Wood would have pulled it through. When it was decided to put a road through, again, Wee Georgie Wood done a lot of things like carting, I use the word, things like bags of concrete, four-wheel drive motor vehicles, bulldozers, you name it, they took them into Tulla and then they put the road through from there. So, yes, it was a workhorse. About 10 years ago, oh, sorry, when they closed the Wee Georgie Wood down, or the railway line down, Wee Georgie Wood sat in a shed at Tulla for a number of years. A group of enthusiasts who, unfortunately, most of them, I'll use the word most of them have passed on by now, decided to get Wee Georgie Wood up and running. It run for a number of years. They've redone some track. And then about 10 years ago, another gentleman and his team rebuilt it and put a new boiler in it. So I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say Wee Georgie Wood is probably a Rolls Royce now. It should go with careful maintenance. It should go forever and a day because it's not doing the hard work that it used to do all the time when it was a working train. So, yeah, look, if anyone sort of, anyone wants to ask me any questions for sure fire about it, I've seen a few ex-Tullerites, I call them, come through and One guy I grew up with, you know, I think he said he hadn't been beyond the train for 60-odd years, so he liked the smell of the smoke.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And she's an old train, though, isn't she?
Oh, yes. Yeah, 1924, you know, might have been made in 1923, but made in Leeds, in England. And I suppose the manager of the mine, it was a mine train, I suppose you could call it, decided, OK, we'd better buy another one. They've had different trains on the railway line, so yeah, it, But there's always some conjecture, which is it? Where Georgie Wood was named after an English comedian, and then the other one, so they said, OK, we've got this one as Where Georgie Wood, we'll name the next one Where Mary Wood.
Okay.
So that's, but then there's always some conjecture, oh, that belongs to Where Mary, that belongs to Where Georgie Wood. But that also applies to a lot of the trains on the West Coast. That's a, you know, I can talk on that too. But yeah, but it's good to see it, and really good to see. Really good to see bums on seats.
Absolutely. So we're just going to, they're shunting the engine to the front now. So
yeah.
Would that have normally? Was that the normal practice?
Yeah, absolutely. The turn and circle, when we was about to link up, there was a turn and circle down the other end.
Mm-hmm.
They had one at Farrell Side, and I never ever saw it operating. I saw a Y-line system. That was the way they used to use it. But, yeah, they normally pull it out, let's say this truck, and it's about the size of this truck, it would have had about that much lead in it.
Okay.
Right, so you can imagine how much weight in a truck this size full of lead. And then the guys would actually hand dig the lead out of the truck, and this was elevated higher than what the EBR truck was.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could imagine a spade half full of lead, how heavy it was.
Yes.
And then they'd have to empty the lead into the big EBR truck, and then that went away. So they would, they'd pull the lead trucks out, and then maybe a carriage behind it, or if they didn't take the lead truck out, then they went every day. And then they'd pull a carriage out to do what they've got to do. Occasionally they might have their truck on the front, and where, as I said, if they said on a Saturday, Lindsay or Bill, how about dropping a flat tray off so we can fill up with firewood? Well, then they might push the load of firewood home at the front of the train. So,
interesting.
It's sort of it's quite ironical because it's about this. This is about the first time I reckon in I don't know, give me age away, but about 55 to 60 years, I've actually looked at someone back on driving the train, which I used to see when I was 6 or 7 or 8 years of age. So, yeah, those memories, they don't go well.
No.
And the smell of the smoke don't go well.
Gets into your blood after a while, would you say?
it was a great, you can't describe it. I mean, it was where the railway line used to run from Tullard to Farrell Side, and a big portion of it's under the lake now.
Yeah, okay.
So, lake's off. But they pretty well took the line up as soon as Wee Georgie was finished. Guys went in and pulled the railway lines up. So,
So do you think by the amount of response that she's had this year, it's likely to become a regular feature here at the Steam Fest?
I'd like to think so.
I'd really like
to think so.
Yep.
And I'm sure that the people that are raising money now to put new sleepers in at Tulla would like to think so too, because, it's not a cheap exercise, and I don't know the dollars, but it's certainly not a cheap exercise to keep the maintenance up on the rail track. They were lucky when they decided to get Wee Georgie out of mothballs, a lot of the hard-working group went around a lot of the West Coast where they knew there were railway lines, sitting in old sleepers, old mines.
Yep.
And they went around, and guys with tractors and dozers pulled all the railway lines up, and they took the colour and put them there. They actually got a lot of railway lines from the mines, so they got sleepers from the mines. Time starts to catch up a bit now. They're starting to run out of sleepers.
Yep.
I'm not sure how they're going with their railway lines, but they've still got a lot of work to do. They've still got a lot of work to keep maintenance up.
So what about, when was she taken out of mothballs? Do you remember when that was?
Yeah, I can't tell you exactly, but I reckon about 68, 69.
Okay.
But yeah, I sort of think the road went through in 64, so I sort of think it'd be around that time, but I may stand corrected on that. Yep. I sort of. But, I wouldn't be far out.
Fair enough. Yeah. But, mate, it's been great talking with you.
Oh, no, that's fine.
A fabulous experience riding on the Wee Georgie Wood.
Wee Georgie Wood, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I know the listeners in Culler are going to be thrilled that I managed to find somebody with so much knowledge.
Look,
a local boy.
If anyone's listening to any of this, whether it's in Tasmania or Australia or all over the world, by all means, you know, if you're going down through the West Coast, if she's sitting in the shed, she's first cab off the rank as you go into Tulla. She's sitting in the shed, at least walk over and have a look and you'll see her sitting there. These guys run, and she's on the net and will tell everyone when the running days are.
Fabulous.
So, and look, you know, just approach these guys, talk to them, and they'll give you a rundown on it.
Absolutely fantastic. Peter, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate
no worries,
that.
Mate.
Going to wind this up with a famous Australian singer or band. Who's your favourite?
Oh, John Williamson, yeah.
John Williamson. How about we play, what do you reckon? Johnny Williamson's Raining on the Rock.
Spot on.
You like that one?
Comes from the West Coast. It does tend to rain a bit on the rocks down that way. So
fabulous.
I reckon Wee Georgie would be happy with that one.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Pat.
No problem, mate. Good on you.
All right. Stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Raven On straight after Johnny Williamson's Raining on the Rock. Yeah.
Spinifex to gold. We've just come out of the Mulga where the plains forever roll. And Albert Namajira has painted all the scenes. And Ashara's changed the luster of his land. And it's raining on the rock in a beautiful country. I'm proud to travel this big land like an Aborigine. And it's raining on the rock. What an almighty sight to see. And I'm wishing on a postcard that you were here with me. Everlasting daisies and a beautiful desert rose. Where does their beauty come from? Heaven knows. I could ask the wedgetail, but he's away too high. I wonder if he understands. It's wonderful to fly. And it's raining on the rock in a beautiful country. And I'm proud to travel this big land like an Aborigine. And it's raining on the rock. What an almighty sight to see. And I'm wishing on a postcard that you were here with me. Described with a picture, the mesmerizing colors of the alders, or the grandeur of the rock. Uluru has power, and it's raining on the rock in a beautiful country. And I'm proud to travel this big land like an Aborigine. And it's raining on the rock. what an almighty sight to see. And I'm wishing on a postcard that you were here with me.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.